what you say, I say, God. And what you pray, I pray. And what you pray, I pray. Where you go, I go. What you say, I say, God. And what you pray, I pray. And what you pray, I pray.
Friends, or it'll be evening when you see this video. Just sitting out this morning, listening to the birds and sitting by my garden, watching the birds. I've gotten to do that a lot the last few months, but learned to enjoy doing that, and it's been fun. But miss you guys a lot. Miss getting to be together on Sunday evenings, and hope everyone is making it all right and surviving this the times that we're in. I've been reading a lot. I just finished a book by Richard Rohr that I really loved. It's called The Divine Dance, and I thought I would share with you the last couple of chapters of the book. I thought it was awesome the way he ended the book. I recommend this book to anyone. It was really, really good. I'm going to read the last couple of chapter or paragraphs in the book. The very nature of God, therefore, is to seek out the deepest possible communion and friendship with every last creature on this earth. That's the job description of God. That's what it's all about. And the only thing that can keep you out of this divine dance is fear and doubt or any self-hatred. What would happen in your life right now if you accepted what God has created and even allowed? Suddenly, this is a very safe universe. You have nothing to be afraid of. God is for you. God is leaping toward you. God is on your side. Honestly, more than you are on your own. I just thought that was an awesome way to end the book, and it was so reassuring to me that to think like that. I never really thought of how much he's on my side, and he is. And through times like this, I guess we feel that, and or I hope we're feeling that, because he is, and he's always with us. But hope to get back together with you guys. Love you all and miss you. See you around.
Sally. I suffer from bipolar depression, control, and anxiety. I have a quote on my wall that says, Friends are our chosen family. And boy, do I belong to the most fabulous family. Again, greetings, family. My control issues are about the world and national politics, climate change, the pandemic of what we are going through now, and the pandemic of substance abuse. In saying the Serenity Prayer, I am hit to my wanting to be in control, accepting the things I cannot change, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, and taking as Jesus did, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. I struggle when I say the Serenity Prayer because I cannot live up to it. Yet every time I say it, I am reminded that I have a family that is so ingrained, that quote is so ingrained in us, that just the community of saying that helps me understand what it means and how valuable it is to all of us. Family, I love you. I miss you. I am glad that we have this opportunity to be together. Boy, do I miss you. Have a great day, and I hope to see you again. I love you.
That's the truth. There's a big
difference.
It's Ronan. We have a little dog.
Yeah.
We ready?
Sure.
Two of us. Boop, boop, boop. You know what, y'all? Oh, this is Wendell, by the way. I know you didn't know that, but I'm bringing you up to speed. This is Wendell. I love Jesus. He loves me. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food, work, and control. I've had issues with pornography, alcohol, rage, panic, and depression.
Hi, Wendell.
I said that like I've said it before.
Once. Yeah. I think I've heard you say it.
Yeah. But anyway, welcome to Pathway tonight. We've been pretty intense the last two or three weeks, so tonight we're not going to be intense. We're going to keep our clothes on. Don't worry about Whew. That. But we're not even going to try to tell any jokes because we suck at that.
It is warm in here, though.
But we're just going to have a little more fun. You know, to start with, it's been a while since we've gathered in this room in the cup. And so you need us to tell you how sorry you are and how dysfunctional you are, because you haven't heard that for a while. So we're just going to remind you of that, because you know, when people start coming to Pathway, they'll come and say, well, I came for this specific issue, but the longer they stay, well, now I find out I've got this issue and this one. And well, we just want to remind you that you have issues, because we don't want you to start feeling good about yourself. That would be horrid. We want you to know that you're carrying around this burden of just heavy issues that you can't deal with. Tongue in cheek. Anyway, we're going to have fun.
Wow.
Yeah, we're going to have fun with this.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. See how happy we are. We're ready for fun. See, anyway, what you don't know is just a few minutes ago in the Mac, I just preached a sermon for Sunday morning on one of Wayne's nine truths.
Which in theory you will have seen this morning.
Back to the Future.
There you go. It's like weird, isn't it? I don't know.
Do we need that flux capacitor thing that he had in that car to do this?
Yeah, I think, you know, we might.
I don't know. Okay. You know that guy? Have you seen that guy lately? He is wild. That actor?
Oh, yeah.
White hair, big bug eyes. Man, he's wild.
He kind of looks like Doc Brown now.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. In real life.
Yeah.
He's a good actor, though.
Yes, he is.
He's a good actor.
He's really good.
Anyway, during that sermon that I just preached that you will have seen this morning, no doubt. I just kind of talked about how Wayne and I did recovery together. And we came into recovery thinking, as seasoned pastors, you know, we had our ordination, we had our education, we would help those people. Yeah, right. And so as we went along, we realized now we are those people. And I always say the reason I'm like in charge of Pathways because I'm the biggest mess up there is. That qualifies me to be in charge because I'm the biggest mess up. So I know you think you are, but you're not. I am.
Okay. I don't know.
So anyway, we just wanted for fun just revisit the three things that kind of we've all realized in Pathway that we bring to the table every time we come. Every time we gather, we realize, and every conversation you have, every encounter you have, every decision you make, everything about life, this is what we take into everything.
Yeah.
And so it's the three things. It's I'm an addict, I'm codependent, and I'm a control freak.
Yep.
And so we're just going to banter that back and forth.
Man, when you realize that,
yeah.
To jump in, I'm Lewis. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus. I'm in recovery for racial and physical abuse when I was a kid, and I struggle with anger and anxiety and trust. But
hey, Lewis,
you know, not unlike you, when Celebrate Recovery started, I was just there to sing.
Yeah.
You know, and me sing, me get cookie. That was why I was, you know,
cookie.
And so, I mean, honestly, and you know, my biggest struggle from the very beginning has been anger. And when I figured out that's what I was dealing with,
yeah,
and why I was dealing with it, and why it had driven so much of the things that I've done in the past, it kind of pissed me off. Because I part of my story is I joined the Army because I got paid to be angry.
Yeah.
And you know, I never really thought about that. and coming in here, that was the first realization for me, was that I was addicted to being angry. You know?
Yeah.
I liked it. It felt good to be angry.
That, we need to hear that.
And
because people don't, they look at anger as being a negative emotion, but it does kind of feel good.
It is. I would say that anger had a negative effect on me that I didn't know, but being angry felt good.
Yeah.
That you can become addicted. Part of addiction is that whatever you're addicted to feels good.
Well, it has to.
Right?
It has to.
Right? And so, for me, it really felt good to be mad. And so, you know, I came in, like I said, I came in, me seeing me get cookie, I'm not an addict. I'm not, I'm coming to lead worship for
addicts.
Those people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when I realized that it wasn't those people, it was these people, right? Then, you know, that was like you're saying, that was the first realization. You know, there's three things that we all find out we're an addict, right? And that, you know, that for me, that was that first realization that I was addicted to anger.
Well, okay, so you've worked the steps.
Yep.
We've been in groups together. We've worked them together, whether they're the 12 steps or the 8.
Mm-hmm.
But the steps are there for a reason.
Absolutely.
That you realize you have an issue and you realize you can't do anything about it. That's the first thing. Because people instantly, well, if I got an anger issue, I'll work on it. How's that working for you?
Yeah. It's not something you work on.
No. So then you realize I need somebody bigger than me who's got their stuff together, which would be God. But I don't just need God. I need some hands and feet and ears and eyes to help. Mm-hmm. And so that's the next step is we write our story. So we write it down, or sometimes we just write it mentally or whatever, but we write it, we articulate to ourselves our story, however you want to do that.
Yeah.
But then where you and I have come in, where Wayne and I came in, where it really gets real is you've got to tell it to somebody else.
Absolutely.
Either in a group or to a person, this is my story. This, and it's, and there's two things to that. One is you need to hear yourself say it. But the other thing is, and if this has ever happened, I don't know it. The other thing is you've got to take the chance that that other person is not going to reject you. Because that's what I was afraid of when I first told Wayne my fifth step.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this is the end of our friendship. And he thought the same when he told me his fifth step. And we've told each other some real stuff.
Yeah.
That I thought, oh boy, is he going to...
Well, I mean, and the same goes for me. You know, when one of the things that... you know, I think Adam said it last week in his sermon. Does the pastor cuss when he stubs his toe? You know, does he get angry? A lot of people think we don't get angry. You know, that part of, you know, whatever that piece of paper that says you're a pastor now, it took away our
humanity
in that we don't get mad when we stub our toes. We don't get hurt when somebody talks bad about us, or says things that are not true about us. And, you know, so that's it. And there's something powerful in that vulnerability.
Yeah, it's sharing it with somebody and then them loving us and embracing us.
Yeah.
Instead of pushing us away, they pull us in.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the hands of God then.
Yeah.
That is a sacred moment because that is God's saying, if they, being human, can love you in your stuff, how much more can I?
Yeah.
And that's what made the difference in me to realize God's not put off with my humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some pretty ugly human parts. He's not put off with that. And the other thing I realized is that he doesn't just say, well, I've learned to tolerate that about you. I mean, that doesn't feel very affirming. But he says, come here. You know,
I'm going to love you.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. It's like, and I mentioned in the sermon that I just did, when Jesus called all his dudes out on all their stuff, he said, come here, let me wash your feet. Let me hug you. Let me pray for you. Let me give you myself. And when you feel that divine embrace, it's like, it's okay to be me.
Yeah.
It's okay to be me, issues and all. And people don't get this. If you're not in recovery, you don't get this. You think, okay, so what? You're still an angry SOB, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that your issues begin to diminish in when you know you're loved by God.
Yeah.
And that's the part of it, that's the magic I don't understand. The mystery of how your issues go away or are greatly diminished
mm-hmm.
simply by you letting God love you. That is the part of this whole puzzle I've never been able to understand, so I certainly can't articulate it. So, okay, so we're addicts. And I was good with that for a while, you know. And then I realized I was codependent. And I was first introduced to that, like, in a real clinical, conceptual way, like in a book.
Mm-hmm.
But then I began to realize, no, this is much more organic. This is not clinical. This is not a theory. It's, okay, just break it down. I'm going to say something really nice to you, Liz. I'm going to compliment you. I'm going to encourage you. I'm going to empower you in your life. Boy, I hope he likes me when I do that.
Mm.
So I'm going into this, you know, on the outset thinking, this is all about Liz. This is all about helping my brother. Now he kind of owes me one. You know, maybe he'll grow to need me. Maybe he'll look to me to be his fix-it person. Whatever, you know, whatever.
Right.
I mean, it can go so many different ways. But what I'm doing is, without even calculating it, without even... It's our normal. We're so used to it that we do nice things, but yet I need to get something out of this.
Yeah.
What I've got with you is not so much love, it's a business deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you this, and I expect that. That's codependency.
Yeah.
You know?
That is, like we talked about last week, that's me versus we, but in the other direction. I'm telling myself it's about we.
Right,
but in actuality, it's about me, and that for me, that's the whole basis for codependency.
Yeah,
is that even in what I can say is my own altruism.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really not. It's really not about walking with you.
Right.
It's about you recognizing that I'm walking with you.
Yeah, and trying to get me to really want to walk with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want Wendell to need me. I want it to where Wendell can't get through life without me. Because I need him to need me. I mean,
encouraging an addiction. I want you to be addicted to what I can give you.
Yeah, and what I've noticed, this can go so many different ways.
Oh, I know.
So many different ways. So some people in a relationship will intentionally misbehave. If I can't get your positive approval and attention, I'll get your negative attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I need you to yell at me, or I need you to abuse me, or I need you to correct me, or I need you to corral me, or I need you to convert me, or whatever. I'm gonna play the negative role so that at least I get negative attention. But I need you to give me that attention.
Yeah,
that's codependency.
We've seen that in children. I mean, children do it all the time.
Yep.
You know, children have this need to be noticed and be seen.
Yeah.
And they have no conception of whether, you know, what it takes to get seen or to what it takes to be noticed.
Yeah.
And so if I am noticed because I'm a good boy and I pick up my toys, cool.
What if they don't notice?
What if they don't notice? Then I'm going to dump my toys back out.
Yeah. Or break them.
Or throw them at you.
Yeah.
Because, my God, you're going to notice me then.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
And when adults, this negative aspect of codependency, adults get very sophisticated. And they use what you call passive aggression.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm gonna act like I'm saying something nice to you, but I'm really criticizing you. I'm really cutting your feet out from under you. So if you're not going to respond when I play nice with you, I'm going to play mean, but you're not going to know I'm playing mean. You know, I guess I'm not needed around here anymore, so I'll just go ahead and leave, you know. It's I'm not yelling at you
no.
for not needing me, but I'm doing my best to make you feel guilty. Or try to elicit some sort of response out of you. I had a lady do this the other night. She doesn't live in this state. She's far away. She did this via email or some social texting. And she wanted to know what I had said in a private conversation with a family member of hers. And I said, I don't roll that way. You know, what I say is private. Well, she jumped all over me with this passive aggression. Well, you know, I'll be more careful when I talk about my family member next time. You know, I'm really sorry I bothered you. And then there was another addition, very sorry. And I thought, if she can't get me to talk with her on a positive level and play her game, then I'm going to get him to react to my negative yet nice comments.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I kind of see right through this. I ain't falling for it.
That's one of the side effects of recovering, is that we see that.
Yeah.
Because one, you know, we're no longer interested in playing games.
Right.
But also, we've done it.
Right.
9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
We've used that before.
Yeah.
And now we recognize it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work on the same.
Well, and what's cool is this conversation didn't bother me. Before recovery, I would have taken that personally. I would have taken it on myself. She doesn't like me. She's going to say bad things about me. I need to protect my reputation. I need to think up something clever or quasi-gracious to say to her to cover my butt and make sure that I make everything squeaky clean. And now I looked at it and said exactly what you did. I see that for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there once, so I don't fault her for it. I don't feel critical toward her. I feel sad.
Yeah.
I'd really like for her to discover something better.
Yeah.
But I didn't, that's happened in my extended family, where people have reamed me out, and I thought, I know that this should bother me, but it doesn't, because I see where they're coming from, and I see where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get into recovery, and you realize you're an addict, and you realize you're a codependent, and you see it in other people, you have so much more grace toward them. You're not mad at them anymore, you're just kind of sad and kind of, oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which brings us to our third thing, is this control, this desire to be in control.
Yep.
And you talk about passive aggression. That is the church way of controlling people.
Yeah.
The religious way, the righteous way.
It's the first weapon of choice.
Yes.
In control.
Yeah.
Is passive aggression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To where it looks like I'm giving you a flower, but I'm really trying to get you to do what I want you to do.
Yeah.
And it comes in so many different forms. I mean, it's insidious. It's persistent. It won't get. It just keeps going. But you have to. I think you have to catch it in yourself before you can catch it in other people.
Oh, absolutely.
And when you see yourself, look at me there. Look what I said. I was trying to manipulate them by being nice. I was trying to suggest that they owe me something by being nice, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But once you do that, then you begin to realize this thing shows up in a myriad of forms in me, the way I express it to other people. So then you begin to see it in other people. They're trying to control me. And, okay, so we've not rehearsed this. We didn't know what we were going to talk about until we sat down, literally,
right.
Mm-hmm. 5 minutes before.
Yeah.
So it's not like so I'm catching you cold on this.
Okay.
So what do you do these days? When you know somebody's trying to control you that way, well, I know everybody's different. Every situation's different. But just let's talk about that. Let's just talk about that.
Okay. A lot of times I tend to either talk to you about it because that's what we do.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I've got 3 or 4 people that I can talk to about it, that I can say what I need to say. And
okay,
know that there's no judgment there.
Come on. Suppose you catch me being passively aggressive toward you. I'm a recovery brother. I'm a recovery partner.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about that.
Absolutely.
You could say, dude, you see what you're doing here?
Let's look at that again. And we've done it to each other.
Sure.
Not in that we were... actively being passive aggressive toward each other necessarily, but the relationship that we built, we can say what's on our mind to each other without having to worry about, oh, this is going to piss him off, I don't want to say that,
or he's gone forever,
or or he's going to take off and he's not going to be my friend anymore. We're past that, and so occasionally we're past
that. There's that scenario. Okay, so then you got family members, you've got colleagues you work with who are not in recovery, you've got people you do business with who might or might not be in recovery. Is it, we're just thinking off the top of our head here. Is it fair to say that we would not, that every scenario would be treated differently? Because I'm your recovery partner, I'm passive aggressive to you, and you can call me out on it. No problem, I can do that with you. What about some of these other scenarios, like a family member? I mean, what if you got a dance? What if you got a passive aggressive dance, and as soon as they say it, you say, okay, I know where this dance is going. I know the dance steps. We've done this dozens, if not hundreds of times. What do you do in that case? I'm not asking you for the right answer.
I don't know. It a lot of times it really depends on there's this self-evaluation that has to happen first for me.
Okay.
To know whether, one, are they being passive aggressive or are they right?
Here you go.
Right?
Yeah.
So good. You have to do this. You have to do this self-evaluation first.
Yes.
You have to say, okay, one, is what they're saying valid? Are they making a valid point? Two, why are they doing it?
Right.
Okay. I have to ask myself, why are they telling me this?
Yeah.
You know, why are they saying this? Why are they talking about another member of our family that way?
Yeah.
Right? Why are they
or trying to get you to do
A
or B or whatever.
Why are they trying, what's their motive behind that? And then you just gotta deal with it and call it out. And that's hard to do. And it's not necessarily something I don't think quick enough to call it out in the moment.
I don't either.
And I think because I tend to let it marinate first.
Yeah, process it. Yeah.
Yeah, let it process first and then kind of formulate what I need to say, or if I even need to say anything. Because it's, I don't know if I'm making any sense.
No, it's making a lot of sense.
If,
okay, so
I gotta make sure I'm not gonna turn the tables on them and do the exact same thing.
Right. Reverse.
And being a, you know, being someone who is in recovery for being an addict, for being, a control freak, for being codependent, that's one of the go-tos, is to just turn it back around and do the same thing to them that they're doing to me.
Yeah.
And recognize, it goes back to the first step, recognizing the problem, recognizing that we really personally don't have control over that problem. And, you know, I think that's why it's important to know that we don't just do the steps and that's it, it's over for all of our issues.
Right.
It's not how it works.
No.
Each one of our issues
yes.
needs a walk through the steps.
Oh, boy, so good.
And so...
So good,
So that, for me, is... I got to start with self-examination. I got to start with, what are my motives for what my knee-jerk response would be versus my thought-out response would be. Are they different?
Yeah.
If they are, generally, I will go with the well-thought-out response first.
Shoot, forgot what I was going to say.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It was there and then, like a brain fart, just left me. All of this goes to self-awareness. All of this goes to situational awareness. All this goes to, relational awareness. And And it takes time, and it's not something that we get graded on that you have to get right away. It's an exploration. It's mm-hmm. something that we just explore, and okay, I see what's around that corner. I didn't quite deal with it right, but there'll be something similar come up, and I will have kind of thought it through. And,
right. Yeah. If it weren't that, there'd only be one step.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's why we call it a process.
Right. You know? And, okay, I remember what I was going to say. So in some cases, I have found it helpful if you're close to the person, whether they're in recovery or not, doesn't matter. If you're close enough with the person, you can say, this is what I think I hear you say. You know, and so you kind of parrot it back and you say that, I'm not sure, help me here. You ask them to help you. I'm not sure what you're saying. This is what I think you're saying. Am I right? Am I even close to right? And that kind of diffuses the tug of war. It ceases to be a battle
mm-hmm.
of wills and becomes more of a cooperative conversation. Let's explore where we both would like to go here.
Yeah.
Instead of where you're trying to get me to go or me trying to get you to go.
Right.
Because that takes all the control out of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're exploring where grace and love and ingenuity and creativity could take us here. So let's, you know.
It's counseling 101.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is counseling. I mean,
yeah.
But it's that flipping the script like that, saying, I want to make sure I'm hearing
yeah.
you right. I
yeah.
want to make sure that I'm, you know, it comes back to the other person being, know that they're being heard.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, making sure that I'm hearing them correctly.
Yeah.
We've said in Pathway before that when someone feels heard, it's the equivalent to being loved.
Being loved, yeah.
And that disarms so many of those kind of situations
yeah.
because if they know you're listening
yeah,
to them,
yeah.
it can also fuel them. But as a rule,
yeah.
if you by asking them what they're you know, I want to make sure I'm hearing you right.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to make any assumptions. That communicates that you love them.
Yeah.
Really, no matter what they said,
right?
At that point, it almost ceases to become about what they said, and becomes more about the relationship.
Right. Yeah, it shows respect, huge respect.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to hear what you.
Yeah,
say.
I want to make sure.
Really
want
to understand
right.
because what you say is important to me.
Yeah.
So it adds all kinds of value to them, and you know, if you've seen the Mr. Rogers movie, I love the way he would diffuse these hot conversations, and he would say, I really respect your conviction there. I really respect your passion for that.
Mm-hmm.
They're all overheated. They're all trying to get you to see it their way, and you're, boy, I respect how you feel so strongly about
it. He was
that.
A master.
Yeah. So, and it's after a while, it just becomes a way of life, and you can do it. And it goes back to what the sermon I preached in the Mac. It's no longer about you. It's not about me. It's not about my feelings, getting what I want, getting my feelings hurt, whatever. This is about seeing what grace can do in a situation, you know? And that's the cool part about recovery, is recovery frees you to do that. You're no longer consumed with yourself because you've already admitted you're an addict. You've already admitted you're codependent. You've already explored that you're a control. That's all out on the table.
Yeah.
I don't have to defend that, explain it, whatever. Somebody comes to you and says, I hear you say you're a control freak, whatever. Yeah.
Pretty
I don't
much.
Have to defend it. I don't have to prove it. Let's move on to something that counts.
Yeah.
And so when you get real about all that stuff, you're really free to love the person in front of you, to live life not about you, but about the bigger thing God is doing, which is loving people.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I'm looking at the clock, but we're running out of time, so. This is more fun than what we've been talking about. But it's really where we're at. You know, man, if people could just hear some of this stuff we talk about and consider it, it would have a lot to do with political unrest, racial unrest, anxiety over the COVID. It would do a lot, because we need to talk about this stuff and know where we're at, know who we are, and know why we feel what we feel and think what we think. That's what recovery does.
Yeah.
It's not about drinking and drugging.
Mm-hmm.
This is about becoming a whole human being. So, all right, so we have...
I got an announcement for...
Oh, let's hear it.
I just want to say congratulations and I love you to my friend Alex.
Yes.
And he's been 15 months working his program.
Yes.
And I am so proud of you.
Yes.
And I love you. And I cannot wait to get to see you in person again and tell you that to your face.
Way to go, Alex.
Ditto. Yeah, man.
Yeah. That's one cool cat.
It's exciting. And that's why we want to be the family that is Pathway.
Yeah. For sure.
Is for changes like that.
For sure. Yep. Okay. Well, one more little announcement. After you see this, or no, it actually would have been before, we had this big plan of recording the band that kind of fell through. We had several people couldn't do it. They had to be out of town. For one reason or another, we couldn't do it. So we were going to have some really cool music to put with this service. And so you may have been tuned in to see that. It didn't happen because we couldn't make it happen. But it's still in the works, and we're still going to do it. We're not going to tell you when, but we're still going to do it. And so there's some good stuff coming up musically with the band that you will enjoy.
So I guess you just got to keep coming back.
Yeah, no choice. Do we try this without reading it?
I don't think I can do it.
Okay, so let's just know that we may mess up.
Okay.
All right. So let's pray together, and we'll depend on you to get it right. But you know,
the words will be right here.
Yeah, God ain't grading us on how perfect we are.
Ooh, thank you.
So, yeah, we're just going to do the best we can. So, here we go. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably
happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever and in the next.
Amen.
Keep coming back. God loves you.
God loves you.
Yeah. A lot.
That wasn't too bad.
Nah.
Two old guys.
Two old people. Hey, I'm just glad we...
we can still breathe.
Yes. All right. Here we go again.